This is Kol Yisrael, the voice of Israel, broadcasting from Jerusalem. In the headlines, U.S. President Obama says he has not yet signed off on a plan to strike Syria. Administration officials will brief senior U.S. lawmakers today on intelligence about last week's chemical attack in a Damascus suburb. In Britain, political opposition puts the brakes on British government backing for military action. Israeli security officials downplay the likelihood that Israel will be attacked in response to an American intervention in Syria. And the polio vaccination is continuing. The weather unseasonably hot. Good morning. It's 6:30 a.m. in Israel, Thursday, August the 29th, 2013, and on the Hebrew calendar, the 23rd of Elul, 5773. This is Nomi Segal with the news. U.S. President Barack Obama says he has not yet signed off on a plan to strike Syria. This as action still appeared likely after Washington abandoned the hunt for a last-minute U.N. mandate. Obama, who was warned that the use of chemical weapons in Syria would cross a red line for the United States, said Washington had definitively concluded that the Assad regime was to blame for last week's attack on the outskirts of Damascus. Asked on PBS NewsHour how close he is to ordering a U.S. strike, Obama said, "I have not made a decision," but he warned that U.S. action would be designed to send a shot across the border to convince Syria it had better not do it again. Obama said, "It is vital to send a clear message not just to Syria, but around the world on chemical weapons." Obama said he was not seeking a lengthy open-ended conflict in Syria, but he argued that Syria's use of chemical weapons not only violated international norms, but threatened America's core self-interest. Earlier, Washington signaled that a UN Security Council resolution proposed by Britain that could have given a legal basis for an assault was going nowhere due to opposition from Syria ally Russia. "We see no avenue forward given continued Russian opposition to any meaningful council action on Syria," State Department Deputy Spokesperson Maria Harf said. She continued, "We cannot be held up in responding to Russia's continued intransigence at the United Nations." A senior White House official told a French news agency that the administration will brief senior U.S. lawmakers today about classified intelligence on last week's chemical attack. Certain members of Congress are expected to get a classified U.S. intelligence report laying out the case against Assad. Some lawmakers have argued that Congress must authorize any military action unless there has been an attack on the U.S. or an imminent threat to the country. Both Democrats and Republicans have pressed the White House to provide a clear explanation of how military action would secure U.S. objectives. House Speaker John Boehner has asked Obama in a letter to make his case to Congress and the public about how military action would secure American national security interests, preserve America's credibility, deter the future use of chemical weapons, and be part of a broader policy and strategy. British Foreign Secretary William Hague says that it's time for the UN Security Council to shoulder its responsibilities. Hague was speaking to reporters after a meeting of the British National Security Council.
"We met this afternoon and we decided unanimously that the use of chemical weapons by the Assad regime is unacceptable and that the world cannot stand by in the face of that. The Cabinet will meet tomorrow to discuss the United Kingdom's response. And of course, as you know, the Prime Minister will present the government's case to Parliament tomorrow as well. In parallel with that, in New York, we have called together a meeting of the permanent five members of the UN Security Council. We believe that it's time the United Nations Security Council shouldered its responsibilities on Syria, which for the last 2.5 years it has failed to do. And we have put forward to them a draft resolution which condemns the use of chemical weapons, which demands that the Assad regime cease to use such weapons, and which resolves to do what is necessary to alleviate the suffering of the Syrian people affected by chemical weapons attacks and to try to prevent the further use of the chemical stockpiles of the Assad regime. I expect there will be further discussions in New York over the coming days, but we have started those discussions about a UN resolution, because by far the best thing would be if the United Nations could be united, unlikely as that seems in the face of vetoes from Russia and China that we've had in the past, but we have to try to do that. We're clear that if there can't be agreement, if there isn't agreement at the United Nations, then we still have a responsibility, we and other nations still have a responsibility on chemical weapons. This is the first use of chemical warfare in the 21st century. It has to be unacceptable. We have to confront something that is a war crime, something that is a crime against humanity. If we don't do so, then we will have to confront even bigger war crimes in the future. And so we continue to look for a strong response from the international community that is legal, that is proportionate, and that is designed to deter the further and future use of chemical weapons. So this is what we have been engaged on over the last few hours.
British Foreign Secretary William Hague. But the British government is facing serious problems in Parliament, with the Labour Party announcing that it will oppose a resolution on military action against Syria unless it includes an amendment that would make the resolution contingent upon the completion of the work and the release of the findings of the United Nations inspectors examining the allegations of chemical weapons use by the Assad regime. Under the Labour amendment, Prime Minister David Cameron would have to then return to Parliament and report on the findings of the UN team. NATO head Anders Rasmussen says that the use of chemical weapons cannot go unanswered and that the 28-member military alliance will continue to consult on the issue. He was speaking after a meeting of NATO ambassadors at the organization's headquarters in Brussels.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms these outrageous attacks, which caused major loss of life. NATO allies expressed their full support to the ongoing United Nations investigation. Information available from a wide variety of sources points to the Syrian regime as responsible for the use of chemical weapons in these attacks. This is a clear breach of long-standing international norms and practice. Any use of such weapons is unacceptable and cannot go unanswered.
NATO head Anders Rasmussen. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says that UN inspectors need 4 days in total to conclude a probe into chemical weapons use in Syria. Said Ban, let them conclude their work for 4 days. The UN chief added that the team's findings would then be analyzed and the result would be sent to the UN Security Council for any action they would deem to take. A UN spokesman said later that the Secretary General was referring to a total of 4 days. This suggested that the inspectors, who began their probe of the alleged chemical weapon site on Monday, but whose work was suspended on Tuesday, needed at least until Friday to complete their work. Syria's ambassador to the United Nations, Bashar Jaafari, has called on the UN Secretary General to instruct inspectors to urgently visit 3 sites near Damascus, where he said rebels had gassed Syrian soldiers since last week. He also accused Israel of pushing the United States to attack his country in order to divert attention from the suffering of the Palestinians. U.S. officials say the Navy is beefing up its presence in the Persian Gulf region, increasing the number of aircraft carriers from 1 to 2. An aircraft carrier which was supposed to head home is to stay in the region for now, along with the vessel which had arrived to take its place. U.S. officials described the decision as prudent planning and said it does not suggest the carrier would play a role in any possible strikes in Syria. The U.S. had previously kept 2 carriers in the region, but budget cuts in February forced officials to cut that to 1. And here in Israel, security sources say it is unlikely Israel would be attacked as a result of an American intervention in Syria. With this, the IDF authorized a partial call-up of some 1,000 reservists and deployed 2 Iron Dome rocket defense batteries in the Emakim and Sfat regions in the north. The IDF stressed the public should continue its normal routine, and a Koyisrael reporter says that despite increased demand at gas mask distribution centers, the army does not plan to open additional stations at this time. International attorney Richard Heidemann, a former president of B'nai B'rith International, says that the violence committed by the Syrian regime is what he calls the direct result and byproduct of the ongoing impunity enjoyed by Syria while conducting terrorist activities stretching back decades.
Syria, David, has been on the U.S. Department of State list of state sponsors of terror since 1979. Syria has sponsored, funded, hosted, and provided material support to such terrorist organizations as Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and the infamous Abu Nidal terrorist organization. They provided passage, they provided funding, they provided intelligence and military support, safe houses in Damascus, and judges in the United States federal court have held Syria not only responsible as a state sponsor of terror, but responsible for supporting terror against Americans and others who are victims of Syrian terrorism.
Is it true, excuse me, that you acted on behalf, you know, legally on behalf of American victims of Syrian terrorism?
Yes, we've sued Syria in a number of different cases and been awarded judgments in federal court in a number of different cases, aggregating what I'm told are the largest judgments in the history of the United States against the Syrian Arab Republic. And in that context, David, are any of us surprised that eventually the Assad regime, whether it be the father or now the son, turned on their own people in a moment of despair? And over the last 2 years, there's more than 1 million refugees, many of them children, 100,000 people documented by the United Nations to have been killed, and most recently the accusations which Secretary Kerry says, and I paraphrase, there's clear evidence of the use of chemical weapons against Syria's own people.
Richard Heidman, who this week in Jerusalem launched his book, The Hague Odyssey, Israel's Struggle for Security on the Front Lines of Terrorism and Her Battle for Justice at the United Nations. More of David Zeb's interview with him can be heard in our upcoming weekend programming.
We are monitoring the situation in Syria, Prime Minister Donald Tusk said, reiterating his stance that Polish armed forces will not get involved in any military operation there, as he does not believe force will have the desired effect. We have experience in this part of the world which shows that military intervention, even from the most obvious and noble motives, rarely produces the desired effect, he said, referring to Poland's experience of sending troops to Iraq and Afghanistan. Poland has been a member of NATO since 1997 and has now become one of the first in the Atlantic Alliance to come out against military intervention in Syria. Similar view was expressed by NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen, who had also condemned recent chemical attacks in that country.
Information available from a wide variety of sources points to the Syrian regime as responsible for the use of chemical weapons in these attacks. This is a clear breach of long-standing international norms and practice. Any use of such weapons is unacceptable and cannot go unanswered. Those responsible must be held accountable.
The NBC broadcaster reported earlier this week that U.S. airstrikes against military targets could begin this Thursday and will be targeted at Syria's regime's military infrastructure. The whole operation could take as little as 2 days, according to NBC reports. Meanwhile, speaking to PBS television last night, U.S. President Barack Obama said he is considering several tactics in cooperation with the U.S. Army. He also added he did not believe the attacks were carried out by the Syrian opposition.
Syria has one of the largest stockpiles in the world of chemical weapons. This is a volatile country in a very volatile region. We've got allies bordering Syria. Turkey is a NATO ally. Jordan, a close friend that we work with a lot. Israel is very close by.
Last week's chemical attack in a suburb of the Syrian capital reportedly killed up to 1,300 people. The Syrian rebel opposition has accused the President Bashar al-Assad regime of carrying out the attack in the Ghouta area near Damascus, which the Reuters news agency described as an expensive farmland dotted with large build-up areas inhabited mostly by members of Syria's Sunni Muslim majority. The ruling regime denied the allegations. Poland, along with 30 other countries, has urged the UN Secretary-General to immediately conduct an effective investigation into the matter to determine whether these weapons were used and by whom, said Ministry spokesman Marcin Bosacki. We expect that all parties to the conflict in Syria will work closely with the UN investigative mission to quickly and fully explain recent reports on the use of chemical weapons, he added.
This is CBC News. Good morning, I'm James Murray. This is World Report. Decision delayed. Britain's parliament puts its Syrian attack plan on pause.
Now, I'm not standing here and saying there's some piece or some pieces of intelligence that I've seen that the world won't see that convinces me that I'm right and anyone who disagrees with me is wrong. I am saying this is a judgment. We all have to reach a judgment about what happened and who was responsible. But I would put it to you that from all the evidence we have, the fact that opposition don't have chemical weapons, the fact the regime do, the fact they've used it, the fact they were attacking the area at the time, and that intelligence I've reported, that is enough to conclude that the regime is responsible and should be held accountable. Let me take
Prime Minister David Cameron making his case in a parliamentary debate on the crisis in Syria. He had hoped to have approval today for military action against the Assad regime, but the opposition parties have balked and are forcing a delay until early next week. They want to hear what UN weapons inspectors have to say. Meanwhile, those inspectors are back at their hotel after spending another day in a Damascus suburb gathering crucial information on that attack. As the world waits on the evidence, the White House is getting ready to make its own case for a military response. Bonnie Allen has more on that from Washington.
We have concluded that the Syrian government, in fact, carried these out. And if that's so, then there need to be international consequences.
Those consequences, he hasn't decided yet. But President Obama says he's consulting with allies and he's received options from the U.S. military. In a televised PBS interview that aired last night, Obama made the case for a limited military response against the Syrian government for its alleged use of chemical weapons.
I have no interest in any kind of open-ended conflict in Syria, but we do have to make sure that when countries break international norms on weapons like chemical weapons that could threaten us, that they are held accountable.
Obama says the U.S. has enough evidence to determine it was the Assad regime and not the rebels who used chemical weapons to kill hundreds of people outside Damascus last week. Obama says he wants to send a message to deter future chemical warfare and protect the security of the U.S.
In a clear and decisive but very limited way, we send a shot across the bow saying, stop doing this.
Some lawmakers here are calling for Obama to show the evidence that the Assad regime used chemical weapons. They want him to seek congressional approval for any military action. In the meantime, the UN weapons inspectors are still in Damascus looking for evidence. Bonnie Allen, CBC News, Washington.
Turkey was quick to condemn the Assad regime for that chemical weapons attack. It's been lobbying for a military response for more than a week now, offering logistical help to any international coalition. But despite the lobbying, Turkey is, like everyone else, playing a waiting game. James Reynolds is on the border of Syria and Turkey.
It looks like Turkey is in favor of airstrikes. What I think is less clear is just what kind of role Turkey could play in any kind of US-led strike. Turkey doesn't have the kind of offensive capability to join in those airstrikes, in possible airstrikes, in a meaningful way, but it hosts both the Syrian opposition and also a U.S. Air Force base in Incirlik in southern Turkey on the Mediterranean coast. So Turkey can provide logistical support. I think it also provides some political support for President Obama. If the U.S. administration decides to carry out strikes against Syria or against targets in Syria, it will want to show that it does have a Muslim-majority population country, i.e. Turkey, with it, and that it's not just the West against the Arab world.
That's the BBC's James Reynolds from Turkey.
4 o'clock Universal Time, 6 o'clock here in Paris. You're listening to Radio France International. Good morning and welcome to Paris Live. It's Thursday, the 29th of August. I'm Olia Horton.
And I'm Brian Eads. The headlines. UN weapons inspectors continue their investigation into chemical weapons attacks in Syria, as the Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon calls on all parties in the conflict to give peace a chance. The US President Barack Obama says no decision has been taken on a possible military strike against Syria. A military jury in the United States sentences a US Army officer to death for an Al-Qaeda-inspired mass shooting. And more than a dozen bombings in Shiite neighborhoods in and around Baghdad kills 59 people.
Coming up in the next half hour, the row over failing education standards in Liberia. And we'll have more on the debate in Egypt on the future of the Muslim Brotherhood. Lots coming up over the next 4 hours. Do stay with us. The United Nations Security Council meeting has failed to agree on a resolution to protect civilians in the Syrian conflict. Britain, which drafted the resolution, was keen to see an agreement which would authorise the use of force to protect the population against chemical attacks. But Syrian ally Russia yesterday refused to endorse the proposal, saying they would not vote on any motion until UN weapons inspectors in Syria publish their conclusions. Britain has also signalled it will wait for those findings and then hold a parliamentary vote, which could take place next week. The United States, although it has not made a decision, says it is sure that the Syrian government was behind last week's deadly chemical weapons attacks. A senior White House official said the administration will brief senior US lawmakers today about classified intelligence surrounding the attack. For more on this, I'm joined on the line now by correspondent Karim Lebour, who is in New York. Karim, thank you for joining us. Now, as we know, the Security Council meeting didn't go well and no resolution was adopted. What can you tell us about this?
Well, this meeting, which was only between the five permanent members, by the way, was merely a diplomatic ploy. The UK knows perfectly well that the use of force in Syria is unacceptable to Russia and China, and they don't seriously believe that Russia would engage on the text. But it is a way to say, look, we are trying to go to the Security Council. Once again, this route is blocked, and there is no other option but to act outside of the Security Council. So at the end, this meeting was just a way for the UK, the US, and France to justify why they will act without a mandate from the UN in Syria.
Now, the UN inspectors are still on the ground. What is the US reaction? Does the US want to wait for results?
What the US wants to do is to act quickly without bothering too much about the UN investigation, which is still going on in Syria. So Barack Obama says that the US has concluded that the Syrian government is behind the chemical attack near Damascus without a doubt. And the State Department added that the US won't allow Syria to hide behind the UN investigation. And this is not going down very well with Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who is saying, why don't we wait for the inspectors to finish their investigation, hear what they have to say about this chemical attack, and then you can make a decision. And this is certainly a problem for the United States, because from what we know, Barack Obama wants to act quickly to punish the Syrian regime with a strike and not to be dragged into a UN investigation that could take weeks, even months probably.
Thank you very much for joining us. That was Karim Lebour on the line from New York. And the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called on all parties in the conflict to give peace a chance in Syria. Ban said UN inspectors on the ground will need more time to conclude their probe into chemical weapons use. And speaking in the Netherlands yesterday, he stressed that the UN findings would be analysed as soon as possible and the results sent to the UN Security Council.
I mean, this is essential to establish facts. And that is why United Nations investigating team is on the ground to do just that. They have completed, as of this moment, the second day of investigation. Just the days after the attacks, they have collected valuable samples and interviewed a number of victims and witnesses. The team needs time to do the job. That is why earlier today, right here in Peace Palace, I said, give peace a chance. Give diplomacy a chance. Stop fighting and start talking.
Meanwhile, military analysts say the Syrian government in Damascus has up to 700 newer Scud-D missiles with a range of up to 700 kilometres, giving it the capacity to hit Israel and other Gulf states. Kiad Kawaji, founder of the Dubai Centre for Military Analysis, thinks that the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad will not hesitate to use them.
how much it will escalate, I think this depends also on the sort of retaliation we could see from the Syrian regime if the Syrian regime retaliates in a very strong way against its neighbors, firing cut missiles at its neighbors or Israel. This could escalate the conflict much further. The Syrian regime has Scud missiles that can be fired at Turkey or Jordan. So it does have the capability, although it is very limited, but it is there. The Syrian regime has not been rational. Any regime that uses chemical weapons against its own people is a very desperate regime and is likely to resort to any scenario.
You're listening to Radio France International at 6 minutes past six here in Paris.
Hello and welcome to the show. With me, Ekaterina Kudoshkina.
And me, Ian Sumter.
Today we shall look at the possible strike on Syria and the Iranian stance in the Syrian crisis.
We are discussing this question with our panel of experts. Sylvia Colombo, Middle East expert from the Italian Institute of Foreign Affairs. Walter Posch, Deputy Director of SWP Germany.
And Dr. Arshin Adib Mokhadam, Chair of the Center for Iranian Studies at the Department of Politics and International Studies at the School of Oriental and African Studies at the University of London, and author of Iran in World Politics, The Question of the Islamic Republic. And before we proceed with the discussion of the Iranian issue in the Syrian crisis, I suggest we could start with listening to Sylvia Colombo. And just to remind you, she's a Middle East expert from the Italian Institute of Foreign Affairs.
Arguably, things are sped up a lot in the past few days. And we may end up seeing tomorrow the beginning of this strike on Syria done by the United States at the forefront with, as possible allies, the United Kingdom and France. Well, this is to some extent an unexpected development of the Syrian crisis, of the spiraling Syrian crisis, because until a few months ago, there were still many attempts were still made at trying to bring the parties at the table of negotiations in the so-called Geneva II conference. Let me begin by saying that if these strikes were to take place, this would definitely and immediately destroy any possibility for diplomatic negotiations between the parties, but also it would potentially elicit a spiraling of violence on the two sides. Inside Syria, we should not forget there are a number of parties that are battling, not only the security forces backing al-Assad and the opposition forces, but also we have al-Hezbollah on the one hand, a number of supporters of the al-Assad regime, including Russia and Iran, and also on the other side we have the Gulf states. So this strike, although it is meant to be a limited attempt to deter al-Assad actions, could have very troublesome consequences for the conflict. Of course, this could also, it does not mean that it could not reach its ultimate goal, which is to stop the violence against the civilians, of which the alleged chemical weapons action of last week is just one of the last examples. But I am quite skeptical about this, this will be the case. Of course, many repercussions could result from such a strike, including an upsurge in the influx of refugees to Turkey and Jordan, which are already creating a number of political concerns and difficulties in these countries. And finally, I would like to mention the fact that overall this action will not be the solution to Syria's complex conflict, because whatever the final, the end of this action is and the result of this action is, we will have to deal with the consequences and the reconstruction of the country with or without the al-Assad regime in a country which is torn, has been torn apart by such a conflict.
Now, everyone seems to be saying that a Syrian operation is part of the counter-Iran operation. Do you think that the strike could have any major consequences for Iran?
Well, I think that the consequences for Iran would be mostly indirect, in the sense that it's not going to directly hit Iran, either militarily or economically, but it's going to be a diplomatic hit on Iran, in the sense that Iran may lose or may see its strongest ally in the region decline. Or, on the other hand, as I said, it could actually have the reverse effect and increase the stance of Iran in the region and of its actors, including Hezbollah. So it's definitely an open-ended game, and whose results are not clear now.
And it all started so promisingly, I mean, with the new Iranian leadership, who made strong signals that they're prepared to talk to the West.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is another troublesome indicator that this strike may jeopardize the potentials for a rapprochement with the Iranian leadership, which have just started to materialize. So in the end, this is not a well-thought action and not a very wise action on the part of the U.S. administration.
Thank you so much. And just to remind you, our guest speaker was Silvia Colombo, Middle East expert from the Italian Institute of Foreign Affairs.
This is Burning Point,
discussing the possible strike on Syria and the Iranian stance in the Syrian crisis. And proceeding with the Iranian issue, as I've been looking through the press today, I've run into certain interesting distortions. For instance, here's a quote from the CNN from a piece entitled "Iran Warns West." They're writing that Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif likened a possible attack to a return to the Middle Ages. Zarif condemned any possible military intervention in Syria on Wednesday, warning of graver conditions should strikes be carried out. The mounting tension has brought warnings from leaders in Iran, a longtime supporter of the al-Assad regime. President Hassan Rouhani, also speaking to the cabinet, said people in the Middle East and the world won't accept a new war and deplored threats, mind you, threats to use force. And here comes the quote from President Rouhani. Any adventurism in the region will pose irreparable dangers to the stability of the region and the world, and will merely lead to the spread of extremism and terrorism in the region. So that's what he said. Do you detect any threat here, Jan?
No, I mean, there's no direct threat. I think it is more saying that this is how the situation is likely to develop in the region, given the actors involved. It requires a very strong, stretching the meaning a little bit to try to imply that Iran would in any way cause these effects, when I think the implication of the statement is really this is how the situation will develop given the actors involved. It doesn't require any sort of threatening. It doesn't suggest any kind of action to bring this to happen.
Absolutely. And then there's another quote from NBC News, which is saying that the Syria-Iran alliance presents a big problem for the United States. Too heavy a strike against Assad could embolden Iran, the NBC News is saying, to come to the rescue and take action against U.S. forces in the Persian Gulf, or unleash Hezbollah against Western targets. End quote. So here again, do we have any reason to believe that Iran is up to some kind of retaliation? And again, the retaliation was something mentioned by the Daily Beast, which is also quoting Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who, like Daily Beast is saying, also hinted that Iran would focus retaliation inside the Middle East. Now, look, we're not only talking about retaliation now, but we're trying to locate where that might happen. And to prove this point, once again, they're quoting Ayatollah Ali Khamenei as saying that American threats and possible intervention in Syria are a disaster for the region, and if such an act is done, certainly the Americans will sustain damage like when they interfered in Iraq and Afghanistan, end quote. So, once again, this quote does not state any threat. Leave alone the retaliation, and leave alone all discussions about the retaliation in the Middle East.
No, I mean, what the Ayatollah is saying here, this is again outlining the scenario, what is likely to happen. It does not imply any active retaliation, revenge, or punishment, which would seem to be implied by the headline and the media presentation of that.
So my hunch is that we're witnessing another information war this time around Iran. But I suggest we could turn to our guest speaker. And here we're joined by Dr. Arshin Abid Mokhadam. And just to remind you, he's chair of the Center for Iranian Studies at the University of London, and the author of a book which is called Iran in World Politics, The Question of the Islamic Republic.
I think the context is very important. Right now there is quite a debate going on in Washington about what to do with Iran, whether or not it is feasible with the election of the new President Rouhani to restart some kind of diplomatic engagement with Iran. So I think some of the rather more hawkish headlines coming out from some sections of the U.S. media have a lot to do with that, because some people are very interested in the United States to jeopardize any kind of potential rapprochement between Iran and the United States. Now, from the Iranian perspective, Syria is very important, as any other conflict scenario, whether it is Iraq or Lebanon or Palestine, simply because Iran has an interest in regional stability. So, you know, Syria has been a strategic ally to Iran since the Islamic Revolution of 1979, even before that. So certainly it's, you know, an important country in the grand conception of regional preferences that Iran has. Having said that, I don't think that Iran would sacrifice any kind of future settlement with both regional countries and more internationally with the West because of the personality of al-Assad. I think Iran has an interest in stability in Syria. If that means that the Assad regime has to go, then Iran may even compromise on that. There were not loud voices coming out from Iran about what the country would do if there would be any military strike on Syria. I don't think that Iran is likely to retaliate militarily or otherwise. I think that's nonsense. Iran has no interest in escalating any kind of situation in the region. But certainly it prioritizes stability in Syria, and it certainly is against any kind of Western intervention in the country.
And when you're reading the Israeli press, for instance, you might come across some very fairly unorthodox assumptions, so to say, saying that Iran is behind the war in Syria. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, again, it depends on what sections of the Israeli media one reads. And there's more sober analysis about what is happening in Syria and also kind of the general region, I think. But if you read through the rather more right-wing sections of the media, then certainly, again, there is an interest in dragging Iran into all sorts of conflicts in the region for obvious reasons. I think the right wing in Israel has an interest in confrontation with Iran. They would like to see some kind of military confrontation between Iran and the United States. So dragging Iran into the quagmire in Syria makes sense from their perspective.
Now, coming back to real politics, do you think that a strike on Syria might somehow affect the prospects of involving Iran into negotiations with the European parties and perhaps eventually with the United States?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that any strike on Syria would be welcomed in Iran or galvanize any kind of diplomatic process. Rather, the contrary, I think it would make it rather more difficult for the new administration in Iran, for the Rouhani presidency, to sell any kind of rapprochement with the West. It would radicalize the situation within Iran. It would probably galvanize the right wing within Iran as well. Iran has made some really substantive rhetorical overtures to the West and even the United States in the past week. And this comes with the risks that are involved for a new president to do that within the Iranian context. So any kind of military attack on Syria would be interpreted by the right wing in Iran as a sign for Western hostility and for, you know, continued U.S. aspiration for hegemony in the region. So it would make it difficult for the Rouhani presidency to sell any kind of bargain with the West in the current situation.
And could it be another argument in favor of pursuing the nuclear program?
Well, I don't think that Syria has such a huge impact on
Iranian politics.
Yeah, on Iranian politics. I mean, the nuclear issue really is independent of the Syrian situation. It's a preference of the Iranian state, and it's really also rather independent of international reactions. I mean, we have seen that sanctions for the last decade almost, and even before that, did not change Iranian behavior. So it's a preference of the state to continue with the nuclear energy program, and they will do so irrespective, I think, of what happens in the region and beyond.
Sarah, thank you so much. And just to remind you, this time our guest speaker was Dr. Arshin Adib Mokhadam, Chair of the Center for Iranian Studies at the Department of Politics and International Studies at the University of London, and author of the book Iran in World Politics, The Question of the Islamic Republic. And that concludes the first part of this edition of Burning Point. We have been talking about the possible strike on Syria and the Iranian stance in the Syrian issue. Join us for the second part of the show. I'm Yekaterina Kudashkina.
And I'm Ian Sumter.